Hello and welcome to the sleep module for the Insulin Resistance Solution Practitioner Training. I'm Dr. Rita Marie Loscalzo, and I'm excited to share with you today some of the really important aspects of controlling insulin resistance that are often overlooked, and that is all about sleep. We are so sleep deprived as a society, and as practitioners, we probably suffer from it as well. And I think that most people don't realize the amazing impact that sleep has on the way that our body handles blood sugar and in the production of insulin resistance. So that's what we're going to be sharing today. And before we begin, I just want to make sure that you're aware, as usual, that the stuff that I'm presenting isn't intended as a replacement for medical advice, and the work that you're doing with your clients is not intended as a replacement for medical advice, but as education and evaluation, not diagnosis and treatment. And it's really important that you make sure that you're aware of this. And if you have someone that you're working with that is on medication for diabetes or insulin resistance, or is working with a doctor or for on any medication for that matter, it's really important that you make them aware that the kinds of work that you're going to be doing in this insulin resistance reset can dramatically impact their physiology and biochemistry, and thus make changes to the amount of medication that they need. So they need to be working in conjunction with the medical practitioner if they're on any kind of medication. And that's to make sure that they're safe and that the recommendations that you give them are done and taken and put into place in a way that's going to be extremely effective and safe. When people don't get enough sleep, they do not flourish. And I'll share with you some studies that talk about sleep deprivation and its effect on blood sugar balancing, on insulin, and on hormones in general. So we'll talk about the effect of sleep deprivation on hormones, mental function, blood sugar metabolism, energy, and weight. When you don't sleep enough, the hormones are out of balance. We'll talk about the specifics. And you put on weight. You put on weight. You're hungry, more hungry the next day when you don't get a good night's sleep, and insulin resistance increases. We'll talk about giving you tools that you can use with your people on adopting a bedtime ritual that encourages sound sleep, herbs, activities, things like that. There's a whole regime, and I'm sharing all that with you. I like you to understand the sleep cycles a little bit, and you can share as much or as little of it with your clients as you need to, but actually choosing a bedtime that optimizes the sleep duration. Sometimes we think that just going to bed earlier is going to give us more sleep, but it actually depends on what time you have to get up and the length of your sleep cycles. And I'll share a little bit with that, and I have a whole document for you to read the details on. Understanding the hormone interactions during sleep. This is critical. And there's a lot of them. We just think, melatonin, right? That's the important hormone while you sleep. Melatonin, good for deep sleep. Well, no, I have a whole chart and list, and I'll go through those and how those work. And I've got more information on the site that you can get more details. And then optimizing those hormones during sleep helps you to maintain steady blood sugar throughout the night, which will help you sleep, and then throughout the next day. Also helps with mental clarity, fit body, and high energy. We'll talk about all those things and how they put together. So let's talk about a few sleep facts. You may have seen these before, but a duration of sleep between 1910 and 1960 was 9 hours. How many people do you know that get 9 hours of sleep? If you ask your client on the first consultation, how much sleep do you get? You're generally going to get below 8. This says the current average is 7.5, but a lot of people get way less than that. In fact, it's estimated that about a third of the population sleeps 6 hours or less. And shift workers, nurses and other people that work shifts, less than 5 hours per workday. They may catch up a little bit on the weekend, but less than 5 hours. And this has devastating effects on the health and on insulin. So some other things. It's estimated that 70% of Americans are sleep deprived. Some have trouble falling asleep. Some have trouble staying asleep. So as you're working with somebody and asking them about their sleep, it's worthwhile to look at those factors and to help them to not only get to sleep, but to stay asleep. One of the most common causes of being tired is lack of sleep. You know, when people come and see you, they go, oh, I'm so tired, and I just need my energy back. And what herb do you have for that? What food do you have to that? What magic bullet do you have for that?
And in reality, you ask them about their sleep. How much sleep do you get? Oh, you know, 3.5, 4 hours a night, sometimes six. You know, it's broken. I wake up every couple hours. No wonder they're tired. It's not rocket science why they would be tired if they're not getting enough sleep. So it really needs to be addressed as an underlying cause of fatigue. According to Mark Hyman, he's an integrative medicine practitioner, MD. He says the most important thing you can do for your health is to have enough sleep. Not just one of the most important things, but he feels it's the most important thing. You get an imbalance between a lot of hormones, including melatonin and growth hormone. And that can actually lead to growth and repair stunting and slower healing. So sleep is critical for so many things, and it's so overlooked. So what are some of the benefits? And this, many, most of these are related to the whole insulin resistance problem that we're talking about. Fat burning. When your cortisol is lower and your leptin's higher, you burn fat more. That's what happens when you get sufficient sleep. When you sleep enough, you get enhanced production of growth hormone and DHEA. What are they responsible for? Growth and repair. And growth hormone helps with fat burning. And we just learned a few minutes ago that DHEA helps improve insulin sensitivity. So overall, they both help with fat burning, lean muscle mass, growth and repair. And when you don't get enough sleep, you don't get the spike of growth hormone. There's one big spike right at the beginning of the night. Usually doesn't happen if you get to bed after midnight. And that's when a lot of the growth and repair happens. So if you're exercising, if somebody that says, I exercise like crazy, I'm lifting all these weights, but I'm not getting any stronger, I'm not building any muscle mass. You might be thinking, maybe I have a growth hormone problem. And we'll talk about ways to optimize it. Sleep enhances focus and attention. They found that people who have enough sleep, they've done studies with kids and given them tests and adults and given them tests on not enough sleep and more sleep. And sure enough, they can stay on task and they can stay focused better. While you sleep, your body's engaged in detoxification and metabolic waste removal. What does that have to do with insulin resistance? A lot, because it's metabolic wastes and toxins that damage your insulin receptors in addition to the high levels of insulin. Enhanced learning, memory, and creativity. There's a part of your brain called the hippocampus that gets damaged by stress, and it gets repaired during sleep. Sleep improves insulin sensitivity. There have been many studies that showed that when you skip sleep or you have a low level of sleep, even for one night, the next day you're more insulin resistant. Now think about that happening over and over again. It creates insulin resistance. It's where I hurt myself with lack of sleep. Not that I couldn't sleep, it's just that I chose not to because I felt like I had too much energy. It decreases cancer risk because melatonin protects against cancer. And we need to have melatonin. We need to have melatonin and growth hormone in balance. And we're going to learn ways that eating before bedtime affects those hormones and how it's dangerous not just for the insulin resistance and lack of growth hormone, but also for melatonin and increasing the risk of cancer. Sleep enhances your serotonin production and reduces depression. It also reduces inflammation. They found that with C-reactive protein, a measure of inflammation in the blood, is a lot higher when people get less than 6 hours sleep. And that can lead to inflammation of the arteries, heart disease, autoimmune disease, joint issues. And finally, sleep helps endurance and stamina. When they do studies with athletes and they check how well they perform on days after a good night's sleep versus a shorter night's sleep, far outweighs on the days they get better sleep, their endurance and stamina. So there's a lot of reasons, and you may share some of these with your clients, you know, the ones that are going to be most important to them. If they value the brain function and memory, and they're really concerned about their loss of memory, you cook it in there. If they're an athlete and they're wanting to build that lean body and have good endurance, but they're finding they don't have as much as they want, you can focus on that. Use these to help you to get people to make the changes they need to make. It's not manipulation, it's education. So just a few more things just to get you convinced. Nurses and shift worker studies, they all find that there's a higher incidence of heart disease. Sleep deficits lead to performance loss, slowed reaction time, impaired memory, and decreased motivation. The uptake of glucose in the brain drops by as much as 7% with sleep deprivation. And your brain is a big part of the uptake of glucose. And they're finding that insulin resistance and poor glucose uptake in the brain contributes to Alzheimer's and other degenerative brain diseases, neurodegenerative diseases. And finally, one sleepless night can induce insulin resistance in healthy people. I went researching this when I first found out that I had insulin resistance, and I discovered an enormous number of studies related to this. And I have on the page, you're going to have a whole list of various studies if you want to go deeper and really study this further. I've done that work for you, but I also know that you may want to dig, especially if it's something that's close to home or you need more evidence to convince somebody. So let's take a brief look at the five stages of sleep. I go into this in a lot more detail on the site. There's a paper about this. Stage one is that light sleep. It's when you first go to sleep, but also transitioning between sleep cycles. If you sleep through the night, you know, say you go to bed and you wake up, you go to bed at 10 and you wake up at 7, that bunk of time was not just one, like you fell asleep and you just slept all the way through. There's an up and down. You probably went through, let's say every sleep cycle is somewhere between an hour and a half and 2 hours. Some people it's as short as 1 hour, but generally an hour and a half to two. So let's just say you went through five sleep cycles. You came into that light stage of sleep multiple times. That's the time when you're most likely to be aroused. Some people think that they wake up because they have to go to the bathroom, but it's really a lot of times it's because they're going transitioning from the deep sleep into the light sleep, and they notice that they have to go to the bathroom. Or that's the time when if there's a loud noise or a bright light is turned on, that you're going to be roused from sleep. Whereas if you're in the deepest sleep, it may not rouse you at all. So that's the in and out stage. Stage two is light sleep. And it's the beginning of your true sleep where your muscles become relaxed and you have that loss of awareness. And that's actually 50% of your sleep. And then the other 25% is in your deep sleep. And there's deep sleep and deepest sleep. Stage four is actually the restorative sleep. And then stage five is the REM sleep where you'd be breathing. The REM sleep should be 25%. The deep and the deepest should be 25%, the light 50%. And the stage one is just your in and out. So that's a normal sleep cycle. That's a normal thing. You know, everybody has a little bit of variation. But it's important to know this. Why? Because if somebody's having difficulty with sleeping, one of the things you want to do is optimize their sleep cycles. And I give you a whole process in a paper that you can read about and you can apply with people. And I think I have a slide that summarizes it. Yes, you can analyze the sleep cycle and help people decide what time to go to bed. So for example, if you know that your sleep cycle, including the transition sleep, is about, let's say, an hour and a half. And you need to get up at 7 a.m. That's your drop dead time. You have to get up at that time to go to work. And you're trying to decide what time to go to bed. If you were to take, let's say, go back 6 hours from that, that would be four sleep cycles, right? 7 minus 6, that's one. If you wanted to get five sleep cycles, that's 7.5 hours. That would be, say, 11:30. But if you find that since you have to get up at 7, you don't want to get up in the middle of a sleep cycle. You want to make sure that you get up at the end of a sleep cycle because that's going to be really restful. If you don't get up at the end, if you get woken up in the middle, you might as well have wasted that sleep cycle. So an easy thing to do is to go backwards in time and say, okay, so it's right now, it's midnight. It's midnight. I should have gone to bed at 11:30 to get 7.5 hours sleep. I'm only going to get four sleep cycles now, and then you plan to go to bed right before, so you fall asleep right about one, like, you know, 15 minutes before to give yourself the transition time. And that way you don't get in bed and then end up feeling groggy. If you wake up from a full sleep cycle, you feel good. If you wake up in the middle of a sleep cycle, you feel groggy. So this is some things that you can share with people. It's a little bit more sophisticated and more advanced, but I just wanted to make you aware of it, and there's a lot more detail on the site. So let's talk about the hormones that need to be balanced while you sleep. Insulin and glucagon. We've talked at length about those. Insulin helps to reduce your blood sugar. Glucagon helps to raise it. So if your blood sugar starts to fall in the middle of the night, glucagon should be released by the pancreas, goes out to the liver, finds some stored glycogen, releases just enough of it to keep your blood sugar where it needs to be, right up there at the, you know, the 75 to 85 range. You shouldn't be secreting insulin while you sleep at all. Okay? If everything's regulated right, you should not be secreting it. However, some people eat right before they go to bed, so they're secreting insulin. The insulin interferes with growth hormone. When insulin goes high, growth hormone goes down. So if you eat right before bed, within a 3-hour period before bed, and there's insulin in your system, that surge of growth hormone that happens within the first hour of sleep doesn't happen. That interferes with your growth and repair. Cortisol and DHEA, well, again, cortisol should be at a minimum while you're sleeping. The lowest level of cortisol happens right around midnight. If you eat right before you go to bed, you have a temporary rise in cortisol, and that can affect the sleep and the amount of DHEA, because again, they're antagonistic. Not that they can't coexist, like insulin and growth hormone are really at odds, but because cortisol steals away some of the precursors for DHEA, we tend to have lower DHEA when we have higher cortisol. Growth hormone is really major hormone, and you need to have these spikes. The first spike within an hour of going to sleep is pretty high, and then the next one is a little bit lower, a little bit lower, a little bit lower. You generally have one growth hormone spike per sleep cycle, and it happens right at the beginning in that second stage, that stage two sleep. Leptin and ghrelin. Leptin is secreted by the fat cells to say, hey, I'm fat, I'm full. No need to eat any more food. Shut off the appetite. We got plenty of fat here. Come burn it. Ghrelin is the opposite. It says, hey, feed me. It's secreted by the cells that line the stomach. And when ghrelin gets secreted, it says, hey, we need food. Hey. And ghrelin actually temporarily raises growth hormone. Okay, because growth hormone will go burn some fat, right? So when you have ghrelin in the system, you raise your growth hormone. Not a good idea to keep ghrelin like at a peak level for too long, because it does have some negative side effects, and it can cause you to be like ravenously hungry. But if you can have people tolerate a little bit of hunger, like I say, learn to make friends with hunger. If you can live with a half an hour of hunger, you can be really happy knowing that ghrelin is stimulating the release of growth hormone, and growth hormone is stimulating growth and repair, lean muscle storage, and fat burning. So it's a happy situation. Melatonin, we all know, is very, very important during sleep. And insulin will affect the release of melatonin. So if you eat something right before bed, then the melatonin isn't going to spike when it needs to get you into that deep state of sleep. So it's really critical piece is no food before bed. You do not want an insulin spike before bed, because not only does it interfere with growth hormone and stimulate a little bit of cortisol, but it also affects the melatonin. And then estrogen, progesterone have effects as well as testosterone. Progesterone helps you to fall asleep better. Excess estrogen stimulates insulin insensitivity. We've got a slide on each of these to go into a little bit more detail. So there's a lot of small print on this slide, and I wanted to include studies if you wanted to look to see where this information was coming from. But overall, like I said, sleep debt causes impairment of the endocrine system. It can affect your cardiovascular system. It can affect your immune system. Here's the deal. If you go 4 days with restricted sleep for 4 hours, the glucose clearance rate is depressed by 40%. 40%. It's like you have gestational diabetes. So no wonder I ate pineapple and my blood sugar shot up to 167. My glucose clearance rate was depressed by 40%, probably more, because I had more than 4 days of sleep restriction to 4 hours a day. really important. You know, I didn't realize I was doing myself so much harm with the lack of sleep. And a lot of people aren't. They just feel okay. You know, they're going on adrenaline and they feel okay. So glucose tolerance is decreased during sleep debt. That's another study. Same thing. Doesn't quantify it the same, but same. There's a couple of studies there. 3 days of 10 to 12 hours of sleep, this is the good news, can normalize fasting glucose. 3 days, that's not bad. That's why I tell people to do a 3-day sleep vacation. Just take some time, go to bed. You can do this like Friday, Saturday, Sunday. You can come home from work on Friday night and go to bed. Don't eat, go to bed. Make sure you wait 3 hours. Go to bed. And just stay in bed 12 hours. Even if you don't sleep the full 12 hours, stay in bed for those 12 hours. And then do some light stuff the rest of the day. Don't make a bunch of appointments and running around. And then the next night, same thing. Go to bed early, stay in bed for 12 hours. Do that 3 nights in a row, and you can normalize fasting glucose. Try it. And if you have someone that you're working with higher fasting glucose, and you're working on the other things as well, but it's not really putting a dent in it, try this. Try it yourself. Sleep deprivation disrupts the normal pattern of growth hormone surge during the first 3 hours of sleep. So that's the big one, within an hour usually. And that's another study. So there's a lot of evidence that supports this. So what's the big deal about growth hormone? Well, we don't all necessarily aspire to a body like that. Not bad. But we want the other effects of growth hormone as well. We want the lean tissue. We want the repair, the growth, the rejuvenation of your organs. So growth hormone will cause an increase in protein synthesis in every cell. So if you've exercised, lifted weights during the day, but you don't allow the growth hormone surges at night, you're not going to be building new muscle. But if you do, the increased protein synthesis by growth hormone is going to help you to build new muscle. It helps to promote the release of fat from the cells. Now, you might be one of these people who's underweight. There are a few of you out there. But most people are like, yeah, bring it on. I want to burn fat. And even some of you who are underweight may not be under fat. You may be under lean. So growth hormone is your friend there too. It helps to shift your cells from burning glycogen and glucose to burning fat. So that's a good thing. And it promotes insulin sensitivity. But it will not be in the system when insulin's there. It's like, oh, insulin, I don't like that, cousin. I'm running away. It goes away. Levels go down. So once the insulin levels get back down to baseline, growth hormone can come out and do its thing, which is really why I keep emphasizing no food late at night. Okay? And also, another trick, we talked about this in the exercise pieces, don't eat too close to working out. Because while you're working out, especially if you're doing burst training, you get this big spike of growth hormone. But then if you eat right after that, something that secretes insulin, the growth hormone level goes down and it doesn't sustain itself for the hour and a half that it normally would. So really, timing is really important. We'll talk more about those timing things on our next session. So growth hormone is secreted in response to an emptying stomach. So when ghrelin gets secreted, it's secreted in response to increased amino acids in the bloodstream. It's increased in response to exercise and the intensity of exercise. The more intense the exercise, the higher the growth hormone peak. They found that 30 seconds of high intensity burst training increases growth hormone as much as 30 minutes of low intensity aerobics. And finally, deep sleep. And we have those spikes a few times a night. So cortisol and growth hormone, how does that affect? Well, cortisol affects the rate of fat burning in terms of it reduces the rate of fat burning by inhibiting lipolysis and increasing gluconeogenesis. So cortisol will help the protein to break down and the fat to be stored. That's the opposite of what you want, isn't it? Growth hormone, when you add the growth hormone into that, it increases the rate of fat burning. But the cortisol surge before bed inhibits the growth hormone surge. So if you happen to eat right before bed, that's going to cause a little bit of a growth hormone surge. Some people have high levels of cortisol at night. Some people have been abused in the night. And those are things you need to be asking. And they're on guard all night long. So their cortisol levels go up. And if you do an adrenal stress index, you can see what happens to that when somebody's cortisol levels go up high. You know that that person's going to have a hard time with lean muscle storage and fat burning because of that cortisol surge at bedtime. It inhibits the growth hormone surge. So let's change gears and talk about another hormone called leptin. Leptin is a new kid on the block. Leptin was first discovered in the 1990s. So it's like one of the newest hormones. And it was an amazing discovery. It's secreted by the white adipose tissue. Oh, that stuff around your waist that the insulin levels go up and they cause fat storage there. That's where the white adipose, it's in other places in your body as well. But that's what produces leptin. It says, I'm full, got enough. And it signals both the hypothalamus and the pancreas that we're full. Okay, there's receptors in the hypothalamus and the pancreas. So the response for the hypothalamus, which is the control system in your brain, is like, let's turn off the appetite. So the pancreas's response is, let's stop producing insulin. We're good to go. So there's a 24-hour circadian rhythm, but it's also controlled by eating patterns. What happens is if someone gets overweight, they override this, right? People eat to be so stuffed, like you just keep eating this food because it's so addictive, and they override it. They add a lot of this leptin being produced because they've got a lot of fat cells. The hypothalamus and the pancreas both eventually get resistant. Just like you get insulin resistant, you get leptin resistant. You can also get thyroid resistant, where your cells get resistant to its own thyroid. You can get progesterone resistant. And most recently, I've found studies linking resistance to estrogen as well. So we can become resistant to all the hormones when there's a flood and an excess that burns out the receptors. So this is your normal leptin function. You start in the evening is when it starts to go up. It's pretty low level throughout the day. This is the circadian rhythm. It also goes down in response to food. If leptin is there and you're not leptin resistant, as it goes up after dinner, you lose your appetite. You're not supposed to be hungry at bedtime. If you have somebody who says, I just get so hungry at bedtime, it's probably because their leptin surged too early and is now coming down, okay? And that can happen by eating carbohydrates too early in the day. It causes an early peak in the leptin levels. So the leptin levels peak approximately 2 hours after you fall asleep. And then they start to go down. Fat burning is high when it peaks. The fat burning time begins right when the leptin peaks. It increases up to a certain point, and when leptin gets to a certain level, then the fat burning is going to go back down as well, which is normally in the morning. So right at 8 a.m., leptin's back down to its lowest level. Okay. When you have a cycle that looks like this, you promote weight loss and normal metabolism. If the leptin peaks too early and it's down too soon, you're going to be starving throughout the day because the leptin levels are not where they should be. And if you're insulin leptin resistant, you're going to find that you're starving throughout the day. There's a really good book I really like called Mastering Leptin. And it goes through lots of detail. Big, thick book, 400 pages, lots of references. So I'm trying to just simplify this down from 400 pages worth of information. With leptin resistance, you see, the peak is earlier. See, the peak is somewhere between 6 p.m. and dinner. You're still awake. The leptin levels are going down, and you're getting hungry. Well, I want food cravings. I want carbs. And then when this happens, the fat burning doesn't start until later, and you don't get as long a period of fat burning. Therefore, you don't get as much fat burning. So we want to prevent leptin resistance. And there's some rules for managing leptin and your insulin that will keep this in line. Never eat after dinner. Really. Like, you finish your dinner, you're done. You leave 3 hours between dinner and bedtime. Byron Richards in his Mastering Leptin says 12 hours is the ideal spacing between dinner and breakfast the next day. So you need a 12-hour fast. Only eat 3 meals a day, because when you eat in between meals, it triggers an alteration of the leptin pattern. 5 to 6 hours between meals. Now, you're going to be working with people who might be eating every 2 hours because that's what they've been told. You have insulin problems. You have reactive hypoglycemia. Therefore, you need to eat every 2 hours. Wrong. Not good. 5 to 6 hours between meals. And there's a ton of research behind this. Get the Mastering Leptin book and you'll see it. I've also given you some on the site. Don't eat too much, because eating too much, that just turns the mechanism off. Eating slowly, so your body gets the signal that I've had enough. A breakfast containing protein. The worst thing in the world is the standard kind of breakfast that people do, which is toast and orange juice and coffee. Or cereal and orange juice and coffee. Okay, or a fruit smoothie and toast. Or a bagel. Bad. Bad news. Okay, too much carbohydrate. So some people go the opposite extreme in their insulin resistance books. They'll say, bacon and eggs for breakfast. Well, that's not exactly a balanced breakfast either. That's just protein and fat, and it's not the highest quality. So I like to see people doing what I recommend here is something with omega-3 fats, like a chia or a flax pudding or porridge or cracker or bread, and something green, because green gives you lots of protein. And you can also add protein powders and other things like that to it. But green in the morning is great. If people are not into drinking green smoothies or green drinks in the morning, fine. Help them to learn how to make stir fries or steamed vegetables or eat a salad for breakfast. I know that's a little weird for a lot of people. But it really helps. And green powders are a great transition for lots of people. It's just real easy. Reduce the intake of starchy carbohydrates, not just in the morning, but overall. But if they're going to continue to eat, they want rice, they want bread, and they're not willing to give it up, at least change when they eat it, and it'll make a huge difference. Have them do it later in the day, with dinner instead of breakfast. So here's some meal timing rules. No snacking, because the more frequent insulin spikes decrease the leptin, promote obesity. Maintaining ideal body weight. Obesity increases insulin resistance, and insulin resistance increases obesity. So you've got to break that vicious cycle. I've said this ad infinitum, no eating at night causes insulin, increases growth hormone and leptin, decrease causes you to not burn as much fat during the night, not go into growth and repair state, and then have cravings the next day. Avoiding the high carbohydrate breakfast. We saw what happened to the insulin curve. It spikes sooner, and then you get cravings for food between dinner and bedtime. So if you're going to do the carbs, it's got to be later in the day. Of course, you know, we have our whole list of foods that we're trying to get them to avoid. Eating a protein within an hour of awakening promotes growth hormone and regulates insulin. So it even can be just a green drink or a protein powder. It doesn't have to be bacon and eggs. Okay? So I included ghrelin just for completeness. It's not really affected by sleep, but it's that ghrelin-leptin balance and its effect on growth hormones. I just wanted to give you a little bit of information about it. Secreted by the cells in the stomach wall, and eating suppresses ghrelin. So you get the ghrelin, you get hungry, you eat, and the ghrelin goes away. An empty stomach will secrete lots of ghrelin, and ghrelin stimulates appetite, of course, and it stimulates growth hormone. So it's not a bad idea to wait until you're really hungry. If you wait and you just eat every time you get that little bit of hunger, then you lose the opportunity to have a growth hormone surge. And it'll help you with fat burning and muscle sparing if you do. I like to just call it making friends with hunger. You know, hunger's just another sensation. If you have an itch in a place that's not socially acceptable to scratch in public, you generally forego the scratching until you're in private. Same thing with eating. You don't have to eat every single time there's hunger. Learning to live with hunger, it's just another sensation. If you've ever had teeth drilled on or had a toothache, that's worse than hunger. You can deal with hunger. If you've ever given birth to a baby, that's a lot worse than hunger pains. So we don't have to satisfy hunger every time we have hunger, the same way we don't have to satisfy itches every time we do. The same thing, we don't have to have a bowel movement every time we get the urge. So melatonin, critical for sleep. produced by your pineal gland, not your pituitary, your pineal gland. And it's affected by light. So light going through your eyes affects the release of melatonin. So when we talk about ways to manage and get better sleep, you're going to see some more interesting ways to manage melatonin related to exposure to light. It's turned on by low light. It's turned off by bright light. So in the evening, we have this artificial bright light because we live in homes rather than in caves and in the woods like animals do. So there's some really good things I'll have on my list of things you can share with people to help, which has to do with turning the lights down. Melatonin's very highly protective of tumor growth, especially estrogen-related tumors, breast cancer in particular. When you sit at the computer and TV at night, we are reducing our melatonin. If you really want to optimize somebody's melatonin, help them to stop watching TV or computer at least an hour or two before bedtime. Eating too close to bedtime inhibits it, just like it inhibits the growth hormone. And it's produced from tryptophan and requires vitamin B6. So deficiencies of these, inability to digest protein well because of low stomach acid. So it's important to be looking at the person's digestion as well in order to have the balance of these hormones. So progesterone, how does progesterone have to do with sleep? And what does it have to do with insulin resistance? Well, more than you think. It promotes deep sleep. So some people will get really good effect if they're having trouble sleeping because of a progesterone deficiency. They can take progesterone at bedtime and fall asleep really well. It helps prevent lipid peroxidation, right? That's the breakdown, the oxidation of cells and cell membranes. And that can affect insulin receptors. It's anti-inflammatory and antioxidant. So it reduces things called NK cells, natural killer cells, TNF-alpha and TH1, which are cytokines that have to do with inflammation. And it helps to stimulate the production of interleukin 4 and 10 and increase glutathione and superoxide dismutase. So it's really important to have good levels of progesterone. And where I'm going to tie this in is when you're under a lot of stress, you're using the precursors to progesterone to make cortisol. And so your protection against these things goes down. Your inflammation goes up. The insulin receptors get damaged. It also suppresses excess estrogen. And estrogen dominance can lead to all sorts of imbalances, which we'll talk about in a moment. It activates GABA receptor sites, and GABA is a neurotransmitter that calms you down. So if people don't have enough progesterone, they may not be making enough GABA, or they may not be activating the receptor sites for GABA, and that interferes with the sleep. And finally, it's involved with the regulation of hypoglycemia. It gets into play along with glucagon or adrenaline, depending on the seriousness of the hypoglycemia. Usually when you go into a hypoglycemic state, that's an emergency situation that's sent out, and the body produces adrenaline and cortisol to bring it back up. And we know that that's not good. So there's a lot of ways that all of our hormones are coming into play during sleep and then affecting the receptors for insulin. Estrogen can have an effect on promoting deeper sleep beyond hot flash control. There were a number of studies that said, you know, we thought that estrogen helped with sleep because it helped control hot flashes, but there's more than that. Excess estrogen in males can induce insulin resistance. There were a number of studies about that. Oral contraceptives that include estrogen, which they all do, increase insulin resistance. So we know that estrogen, higher levels of estrogen, increase insulin resistance. So when we have deficiency in progesterone, it allows the estrogen to get out of balance. And the combination of the two contributes to more profound insulin resistance. And how do we get estrogen dominant? Plastics in the environment, a lot of xenoestrogens, dental materials, birth control pills. There's all sorts of ways to get estrogen dominant. And a lot of people are estrogen dominant. Estrogen increases the amount of time people had REM sleep and reduced time awake. So it's not just that estrogen is bad, progesterone is good. You need the right amount. So too little estrogen can reduce the amount of REM sleep that you've got. And you end up being awake more. So you need the kind of Goldilocks principle, right? Just the right amount. We know how important the management of stress is to managing all the rest of the steroid hormones, the DHEA, the estrogen, the progesterone, and the testosterone. So going back to all the techniques you've got in your module that help with stress. Now, on the one hand, we go, well, this whole insulin resistance thing, it's simple. You just put them on a low glycemic diet. You see that it's a lot more than that. For some, just doing the diet is great. And even doing the diet is not just like, oh, it's so easy. It's hard for some people. But these other factors play huge roles. And I have a lot of people who will go on the program and they're doing the diet and they're saying to me, I don't understand. I've been doing this diet for 6 weeks and my glucose levels are still high. I still have a high fasting glucose. Why do you think that is? And I'm like, whoa. Can you hear the tone in your voice? You're really stressed about it. And you don't realize how much that affects them. Okay? It's really, really important to control these things. And the stress is, like we said, not just the emotional and mental. So if they've got a hidden infection somewhere in their gut or in their joints, they're going to have a stress on their system. Inflammation somewhere, arthritic joints, an autoimmune process. All those things are going to contribute to the stress, the physiological stress. So it's really about balance in the whole body. We're focusing on insulin resistance because it's super important. And there are a lot of ways to get it under control. But you can't overlook the stresses happening in the rest of the body. It's really you being the detective that determines what's really going on for this person. And finally, we've got testosterone. And it's associated with snoring and sleep apnea if somebody doesn't have enough. And excess testosterone in women is associated with insulin resistance. So we went back to excess estrogen in men and excess testosterone in women. So it's a matter of having the right amounts of our particular sex hormones and the right amounts of the opposite sex hormones, right? Sleep can increase testosterone. So if somebody's testosterone deficient, getting a good night's sleep is important. Sleep deprivation decreases testosterone. That makes sense, right? When they look at diabetics, across the board, they have a lower level of testosterone. So testosterone contributes to, lack of testosterone contributes to insulin resistance. And we know that men who have low levels of testosterone have more belly fat. That happens a lot to men as they get older. Women go through menopause, men go through andropause. And in andropause, you end up with men who get, you know, low energy and belly fat. Well, it may have something to do with the insulin resistance being induced by low levels of testosterone. You've got the background into why sleep is so important. You're going to have to watch this a few times and read through all the resources, and it'll take time before you own this. But the more people you work on with this, the more you're going to own this. I've given you resources, a document about herbs and supplements to assist with sleep. There's a document about understanding sleep cycles. There's a document about hormones that dance in your sleep. And then there's a resource list of the hormones involved with sleep and how they affect blood sugar. And then there's a document that's just a bunch of studies, list to studies. It's really important that you have some good sleep resources under your belt. Not just for your insulin resistant patients, but in general, you're going to see insomnia coming through a lot. And there's a lot you can do with lifestyle and nutrition. All about fixing things as much as you can with lifestyle and nutrition. I've given you lots of resources. And not everything's going to work with every person, but you'll have a lot of tools in your toolkit. It's nice when you don't have just one tool in your toolkit. Right? It's often said about modern medicine is when if the only tool you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. So if the only tool you have is some pharmaceutical medication to deal with insulin resistance, then that's what everybody's going to get. And they're overlooking really making a profound difference. That's what's going to set you apart. We've talked about many of these things. I've just pulled them all together, and they're talked about in greater detail on the site in the documents you have. Stop eating within 3 hours of bedtime. I think I've made a case for that by now. If you dim the lights in the evening, you'll stimulate the natural environment, and that will stimulate melatonin. So it doesn't mean you have to turn off the lights, but turn down to low incandescent lights. You know, read by candlelight. Do things that are softer rather than sitting in the bright lights and sitting in front of a TV or a computer. Within 2 hours would be nice. The TV, if you're going to do the TV in bed, make sure they've got the lights closed and they're reclining to watch it. But it's not a good idea. It's just hard to break people of that habit. Avoid intense exercise close to bedtime. I know people who go out for a run and then they take a shower and go to bed. Not great for sleep. And it's going to, you know, keep the body temperature higher, and it's not going to allow you to get into the optimal hormone balance during sleep. For some people, hot baths interfere with sleep, but if they take a nice lukewarm or neutral bath, it can be really helpful for helping the body to go down. That you'll have to just see what works for different people. And of course, meditations, visualizations, the mini vacations, the little heart math excursions right before bed is going to turn down the cortisol. So I recommend people get into bed. If they've got anything on their mind, to take out a piece of paper, a notebook next to it, and just jot it all down. Get it out of your mind so it doesn't keep you awake during sleep. And once you've done that, then go ahead and lie down, close the lights, and do some appreciations. Find three things that you appreciate more than anything throughout the day. And then do a little mini vacation. Go to the beach. Make it longer. In your stress transformation bonus, I teach you all about the other techniques within HeartMath, and there's one they call Heart Lock-In. Nice time to do it would be before going to bed. Have your people learn how to do that. You can teach them once you learn yourself. Next part, avoid intense mental activity within 2 hours of bedtime. So if you're taking a physics course and you're having a test the next day, studying right up to bedtime is going to keep those cortisol levels peaked. It's going to affect the hormone balance. If you have outdoor activity early in the day before 1 p.m., that gets the bright light in through your eyes and decreases the melatonin during the day, so it's allowed to increase later. If you stay indoors all day in the dark and then you go out later, that's going to really throw off your melatonin levels. And a best thing to do, if you can, is first thing in the morning when you get up within the first 15 minutes is to go out and just let them sunlight bathe into your eyes. Even if it's not bright and sunny yet, that's going to help to turn the melatonin off so that it's down for the day and then comes up later in the night as soon as you turn the lights down. Bright lights off as soon as possible after sunset. Go camping sometimes. You know, go camping and you may have that little incandescent flashlight that you read by, but that's not going to really affect you too much. It's the bright lights. The neutral bath, we talked about that. Before bed, 15 to 60 minutes, somewhere in that time range, especially if you throw in lavender oil. This is for somebody who's having trouble falling asleep. And I'll give you a list of herbs, best to take them between 30 and 60 minutes before bed, and then again at bedtime for somebody who has a lot of really serious problems falling asleep. And the choice of herbs is going to depend. You're going to have to play it by ear, learn about the herbs, and choose the right ones. And then it's a really good idea to be horizontal for 30 minutes to an hour before sleep. So if you lay down and just allow your body to rest into it and maybe read a little bit or just meditate or do a heart math excursion, that would be really great. These are all things that help optimize sleep. Here are some herbs and supplements. I've just given you like a little one-liner about these. I recommend that you just go explore them and read about them and see which ones that you're going to use if you have a problem yourself or your clients have problems. There's also a bunch of Chinese herbs, which I'm, you know, my Chinese herb Materia Medica is not my strong suite. But passion flower is really great for people who've got the mind chatter. They're thinking about this and that and can't turn off the brain. Passion flower can do a great job with that. Lemon balm relaxes the mind, but also the whole body. Chamomile is real soothing, relaxes muscles, it relaxes the digestion. Hops is a little bit stronger than the ones above, but really good relaxing. I'll tell you, right before I did my elbow surgery, I wasn't doing anesthesia, but I wanted to be relaxed. I took a whole bunch of hops in the morning and valerian before I went there, and then I took another heavy dose of valerian, and I think the combination had hops and lemon balm and a bunch of other stuff in it. I took that right before I went so it would calm me down, and it made a huge difference. I could feel my body. I was kind of dozy. only lasted for 45 minutes because people were, it was a bit of a different situation than sleep. So phosphatidylserine is an amino acid that helps to decrease cortisol levels, the production of cortisol. So if you have somebody who's just really that high at night, or they have a history of abuse or being broken into their house and robbed during the night, somewhere where they don't feel safe at night, phosphatidylserine would be good. And if you've done an adrenal stress index and they have high cortisol. Magnolia is another one, really good at helping to calm down the cortisol, stress-induced sleeplessness. And then adrenal adaptogens and learning about those, that would be really helpful as well. Getting out in the morning sun, critical, using relaxing herbs before bed, schedule a 3-day sleep vacation. Remember we talked 10 to 12 hours of sleep 3 days in a row can help reset the insulin receptors. And sleep in as dark an environment as possible. And this is critical because some people sleep with their bedrooms or in the front of the house. They don't even realize that that's affecting their sleep, the bright light coming in. So room darkening shades or some eye covers, there's a number of ways that they could do that so that it's really dark. Turning off or alarm clocks turned away, or having the dimmer turned way down, those bright red lights, the LEDs, are not good for promoting deep sleep. So that's what we have for your stress and your emotional and your sleep issues related to insulin resistance. I know there's a lot here. I wanted to give you as much as possible. There's more. There's background. You can read the stuff on the site and really learn this stuff and really be able to work with people. The more you work with people, the more natural it's going to become. The more you listen to me talk about it, the more natural it's going to become. The more you read about it, the more easily you're going to be able to access the information. Okay? It's not rocket science, but it's nice to understand the mechanisms so that you can then put it into place. You may not remember exactly all the mechanisms and be able to recite everything that I've taught you, but you're going to have the sense, wow, that, you know, it's really important to manage the stress. What are some of the tools that work best? Really important to deal with the sleep and the hormone balance and the timing, all the things that you can control.